Thank you. Thank you, Trev and company. Appreciate it so very much. Thank you for being here this evening. And we are going to start a series here called One Degree. And I'm very excited about it. And I want to say before I get going, thank you to all the staff. But do we have a great staff or not? I mean, really. Amazing, best summer ever, and it's just because of their servanthood and their spirit and abilities, and it really was a great summer, and I want to thank our leaders for allowing me to have some time off. I always take a lot of time off every summer, but I took more time this summer, and that was kind of mutually agreed upon, just for the record, between me and the leaders, and I'm grateful for it. I needed it, and I wanted it, and I am glad that it's over, and I'm glad to be back, and good to be here tonight with you. Well, this should be interesting, One Degree, because you can go a million different ways with this theme, and we're going to go a bunch of different ways, let me tell you. You are one. There's one direction. The importance of one, each one, unique, beautiful, and powerful. I say a lot around here, you may not remember it, but I say from time to time, this isn't about me. This summer proved this church, it's not about me. That is a good thing. It's about you, it's about Jesus. And you, as the people of the church, you make the church. You make it or break it. I'm just telling you, that's how it works. The power of one, it's about you. We are a large group of a bunch of little ones. That's how it works. That's how a team works. That's how family works. That's how Jesus described the church. One body, but many parts, individual parts, little ones. Jesus said in John 17, we are one. That whole prayer is about unity. We're probably going to talk about that in this series. Paul said there is one Lord, there is one faith, there is one baptism. There is power of one. I mean, one person can make a huge difference in somebody else's life or many other people's lives. One person. You remember the story about the little boy with the loaves and the fish. One person made a huge difference that afternoon in a lot of people's lives. And then we're leading up, this series is leading up to our 60th anniversary for our church. And we're going to have Jeff Walling, who's preached here on several different occasions. He's going to preach that weekend. But all through this series, as this series grows, we're really getting to this is really the main theme. We are going to, we want you to pray for one. We want you to literally write down one person's name and to pray for that person that you might be able to share the love of Jesus with that one other person. Some of you are probably thinking, well, I don't know who that person is right now. Well, that's fantastic. You will. That's what this is about. We're going to find out who that person is, and we're going to ask the Lord if we might be able to every single day, if there'd be some way we could share the love of Jesus with that person. We're going to pray for that one. I want to begin this series with this question tonight, and I'm calling the sermon One Big Question. I think it's the biggest question ever, and I don't even think it's close. How many of you have kids, and do your kids ask you a lot of questions? I mean, mine are out of the house now, but when they were little, they asked me questions all the time, and I got sick of it. Actually, I ask one kid a lot of questions, and the other kid asked me all the questions. It's kind of a weird setup, but I got tired of it being asked questions all the time. And how many of you have an iPhone? Do you have some sort of phone? You have if you have an Apple phone or something, you have an assistant, a wonderful assistant called Siri. How many of you have Siri as an assistant? How many of you use Siri as an assistant? How many of you set Siri's voice up to be British? Any of you? I did. There's something about it I really like. And she's very smart. I mean, she can answer some stuff just like that. And so, the other day, I needed direction something, and it kept going out. I got mad at Siri. I feel bad about it now, but I kind of got mad at her. But she's also funny. And I've asked her some questions here, and some of these answers are different. Have you ever asked her, hey, Siri, Why did the chicken cross the road?
I am not perspicacious about the peregrinations of poultry.
That wasn't very good. Can you hear that at all? Where's the mic on this? I'm afraid to touch it. It'll. Okay. How about this one? Hey Siri, where is Elvis?
I believe he's left the building.
And she'll give you different answers too. Once I asked her that, she said he's at the end of Lonely Street or something like that. Hey Siri, where is Elvis?
He's not dead. He just went home.
Oh, a little spiritual note there. Oh, okay. I got a good question here. This is my favorite. Hey Siri, what is 0 divided by 0?
Imagine that you have 0 cookies and you split them evenly among 0 friends. How many cookies does each person get? See, it doesn't make sense. And Cookie Monster is sad that there are no cookies. And you are sad that you have no friends.
How does she know? Well, the Bible has a lot of questions and a lot of answers. The greatest questions in the world are asked in the Bible. I believe that with all of my heart. The devil asked a question early on, chapter 3 of Genesis, when he said, this is what he said to Eve. And by the way, when he asked this question, you say it's a question, it's really an accusation. That's what the enemy does. That's what the devil does. Don't ever jump in when somebody's accusing somebody of something and you don't know the facts. Don't jump in on that, because that's not of the Lord. That's always of the devil. They may be wrong and they may have done something wrong. Don't you be an accuser. The devil's nickname is Accuser of the Brethren. That's what he does. He likes to point out things that aren't right and accuse. And he says, the first question he asked in the Bible, third chapter of the book, way early on, he said to Eve, did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Did God say that? No. That was an accusation. It was a lie. It was filled with deceit. It's already accusing. God said not this one tree, not all. God said you could do all the stuff with all the trees in the world, but that one. But that's how he works. That was the first question the devil asked. The first question God asked is later in that same chapter when he says to Adam, after Adam and Eve sinned, Adam, where are you? Now God knew where Adam was, but he wanted Adam to admit where he was. First question God asked is, where are you, to man? In the New Testament, the first question man asks is to God, and the question is, God, where are you? Matthew chapter 2, the wise men, where is he who is born king of the Jews? And so many great questions in the Bible. Job asked, if a man dies, will he live again? Paul said this, he said, if God is for us, then who can be against us? Jesus said, what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and forfeits his own soul? The Hebrew writer said this great question, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? But I want to tell you today, friend, the greatest question I think in all the Bible is from a guy named Pilate, Pontius Pilate, who asked this question in Matthew chapter 27 and in the other Gospels as well. But he asked, what shall I do then with Jesus? I'm telling you, I think that's the greatest question. That's the one question that each and every one of us has to answer. You have to answer it. I have to answer it. Every single person must answer this question. I want to read a lengthy text, and I'm going to let you just remain seated. But in Mark chapter 15, another gospel, the same story basically, but a little different reading. I'm going to read the 20 verses, so just bear with me here for a second. Very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders and teachers of the law and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. Everybody say one decision. They came together and they made one decision. That's what this sermon's about. One decision. One question, one answer, one step of faith, one commitment. One decision can implicate and indicate the following 1,000 decisions and steps. Just one. The domino effect is amazing. But you got to make the right choice. You got to make the right decision. They make the wrong choice right here. They reached a decision. They bound Jesus and led him away and handed him over to Pilate. And Pilate said, "Are you king of the Jews?" And the chief priest accused him of many things. Pilate asked, again, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many..." By the way, here's more accusations. I wonder who's behind this. Let me tell you who's behind it. The devil. It's what he does. "How many things they are accusing you of, you're not going to answer?" Jesus still made no reply. Pilate was amazed. It was a custom of the feast, this was a tradition, to release one of the prisoners. And so it came down to Jesus and a guy named Barabbas, who was in prison for some really bad stuff there. And the crowd came up and they asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did, offer one of these to be released. Verse 10, knowing that it was out of envy the chief priest had handed over to Jesus, Pilate's thinking, hey, they'll let Jesus go. They're going to want Barabbas to remain in prison because I can't find anything that Jesus has done wrong. But the chief priest stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with Jesus?" is the question in verse 12. "What shall I do then with the one you call King of the Jews?" They said, "Crucify him." They yelled, "Crucify." Why? He hadn't committed any crimes. They kept yelling even louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd. Notice, wanting to satisfy the crowd. He released Barabbas and had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. The soldiers led Jesus away into the palace, that is the praetorium, and called together the whole company of soldiers. And they put a purple robe on him, twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on him, and they began to call out to him, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they struck him on the head with a staff. They spit on him, and falling on their knees, they paid homage to him. It was all a big joke. And when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put his own clothes on him, and they led him out to crucify him. I want to ask you, here's the whole deal today. I need you to answer this question with Pilate. What shall I do with Jesus? It's a personal question. The question is not, listen, what is the church going to do with Jesus? It's not, what shall we do with Jesus? It's, what will I do? What will you do with Jesus? It is a pressing question. It's one you must answer before you stand before God. Now, we know today life's full of choices. I've told you before, when I grew up, there was NBC, CBS, ABC, and PBS, and you had to adjust the antenna to get all of those clearly every day. And today, with cable and satellite and live streaming, you have thousands and thousands of viewing choices. You used to have three really shades of ice cream, vanilla and chocolate, and if you got lucky, you had a little strawberry. That was it, that was it, that was it. And you, man, if you had those choices, you felt like a millionaire. And today, there are hundreds and hundreds, and somebody told me there's a horseradish-flavored ice cream, and that can't be biblical, but lobster ice cream, somebody said. Bacon and beets ice cream, that also is not of God. But those are those are relatively insignificant choices. We have other choices, other decisions. What am I going to do with my life? Where am I going to live? Am I going to get married? Who am I going to marry? Am I going to go to college? Where am I going to go to college? What am I going to do for a living? A lot of really big choices. Am I going to root for the Giants or the Dodgers? I mean, that's a big one people always ask me about. But the biggest decision you'll ever make is, what are you going to do with Jesus? And you know that Jesus, listen carefully, Jesus is generous. Jesus is patient. Jesus is kind. And take this the right way. This has nothing to do with the abortion stuff. Jesus is pro-choice. Jesus always wants you to decide. He never forces himself. Jesus is a gentleman. He allows you to choose. From the very beginning of this book in Deuteronomy 30, then Moses had gathered with a second generation of Israelites. He said something very interesting. He said, God has placed before you, he's saying this to all his people, life and death, blessings and curses. You get to choose which one you want. And he encourages them, choose life. Joshua in chapter 24 basically said to the same folks, the next generation, choose you this day whom you will serve. I've already made my choice. Me and my family, we're going to serve the Lord. But you need to make that choice. Joshua couldn't make that choice for them. And I can't make a choice for you. If I could, I would. But I can't. You must make it. In 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah faced a false God-worshipping nation, and he decided to have a God contest at Mount Carmel. And he says in verse 21, no more sitting on the fence. If Baal is God, if you believe Baal is God, then you choose to worship him. But if God is God, if Yahweh is God, then you choose to worship God. And of course, God always wins the God contest. But he also always wants to give you a choice in the matter. And I want to look at some choices that people made in that text that we read. And I want you to compare your choice to theirs. First of all, we have a guy by the name of Pilate. And Pilate made a choice. If you have your notes, Pilate made a choice to refuse Jesus Christ. Pilate made a decision. I mean, he had all the power. He was the one who could have done anything. He could have released Jesus 100 times and said to the crowd, "Ah, forget you. You don't know what you're talking about. That Barabbas is a rebel rouser, an insurrectionist, and a murderer. We're not going to let him go. Let Jesus go, and we'll deal with him later." But he couldn't make that decision. He made the wrong choice. He refused Jesus Christ. 3 times the Bible says he went to the Jewish leaders and said, I can't find anything this guy has done wrong. He doesn't deserve the death penalty. What's wrong with you people? But the Jews and Jewish leaders knew the soft spot in Pilate's heart. Pilate had one boss. His name was Caesar. And the Jews said to him, "Hey, Pilate, you know, if Caesar finds out about this, here's a guy who claims to be a king, and you're going to let him walk? Caesar wouldn't like that. And I'm telling you, Pilate did not want to have his job in jeopardy, and so he eventually, bottom line, I know it sounds crazy, he chose his career over Christ. And he said, okay, crowd, if that's what you want, I'll release Barabbas and we'll send Jesus up the road here to be crucified." What a terrible, terrible choice. And yet today there are people all over who basically do the same. Other things are more important. They're interested in Jesus. They're fascinated by him. Maybe you're here today, you're a little curious about him, but you've never really decided to put him first. You're not going against the grain enough to come to that point where you make such a politically incorrect decision to say something so crazy and bold as, "Jesus is the only way to heaven." Well, that's a big choice. That's a big decision. I wish you would make that over everything else, including your career. You may be number two like Herod. You may choose to admire him. Herod, this wasn't his last name, but they called him Herod Antipas. And it meant several things. But Pilate learned that Jesus was from a district of Galilee. And again, he couldn't come to a conclusion that he was peaceful with. And so he sent Jesus back to Herod because he thought Herod, who was over the Jews there, like a governor of the state, he thought that if Herod dealt with it, then Pilate had nothing to do with it and he could get out of this situation. Well, Herod wanted to see Jesus. You say, that's crazy. This is the same guy that had John the Baptist's head removed from his shoulders. Same Herod. And I find this passage fascinating. Luke 23, it says that when Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased. He didn't say, "Uh-oh, here comes Jesus. Wah, wah." No. He was greatly pleased. It's Jesus. Because for a long time, he'd been wanting to see him. And from what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some sort of miracle, some sort of sign. Oh, he was really into Jesus. I want to meet him. I want to see the show. So he was interested. He was excited about it. All right, I got to spend some time with Jesus. Like Thursday night, we had that guy here from Full House or whatever it was. He was, man, we had people coming out of the woodwork. They want to see him. They want to be around him. They're fascinated. Stay from here 7 to 11 o'clock. No problem, man. We want to be around the guy who's been on TV. It's so fascinating, isn't it? That's what they were like with Jesus. Just want to be around him just for a little while. It'll be so amazing. Can't wait to see Jesus. And yet, the Bible says when they got in his presence, he bombarded Jesus with questions. And guess how many of the questions Jesus answered? Not a one, not a single one. He just stood there. Isaiah wrote years ago, like a lamb, dumb, silent, before its shearers, he did not open his mouth. And there are people today, I just believe, who are fascinated with him, but they don't want to give him the credit of who he really is. They don't want to make that gutsy decision that he is Lord of all. They can't get to that point. Even Richard Dawkins, 77-year-old leading spokesman for atheism, Oxford University professor, who's written many horrendous writings, such as a book called The God Delusion. But even he says, and this is what they do, they try to placate a little bit. They don't want to come across as a monster, so they always try to give Jesus a little credit. It's like it validates them so that they can then just smash him to pieces. Dawkins wrote, Jesus was a great moral teacher. He went on to say he was such a radical thinker that if he lived today, he would probably be an atheist. Yeah, give him a little credit so then I can come over here and just crush him. And they think that makes them look good. He was a good moral teacher, really. If you studied the claims of Jesus Christ, my friend, he cannot be both. If what he said was true, then he is the Son of God. And if what he said was not true, then he's the most deceitful, dishonest, cold-blooded person who ever lived. I mean, just think of these three claims. Jesus claimed that he existed before Abraham. Now, Abraham was the father of all of these religious people and all their faith. And here's Jesus one day, and he goes, yeah, I was before Abraham. Oh, really? Thanks. That's very interesting. What a guy. What a great moral teacher. Come on, let's go have some lunch. Jesus claimed that he was one with God. You know God, the God that you've worshipped for thousands of years. Me and him are like this. We're just the same. I'm his son, and yet I'm God at the same time. Fascinating. Thanks for the lesson. You're a great moral teacher. We love your principles, like do unto others and things of that nature. What a good teacher you are. I don't know how you get all that stuff, but it's amazing. Jesus claimed to have authority to forgive sin. I mean, that was the most blasphemous, sacrilegious claim in the world if he wasn't actually God in the flesh. But he was. And so to sit back and just to claim he's somebody good and he had some good teachings and, oh, it might be good to consider some of those because he was a good guy, my friend, that is patronizing. That's just playing the game. He either was, is, or he isn't. Jesus is a great teacher is not a viable option, friend. To quote another Oxford University professor who came a little earlier, who was not an atheist but an agnostic and then made that one decision to come to Christ, one decision to give his heart and life to Jesus. He became a great Christ follower and writer and witness for the Lord named C.S. Lewis. You've probably heard him. We quote him about every other week around here. C.S. Lewis wrote, "You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God, but let you not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. I want to tell you today, listen to me, church, you get to make that choice. You can push them to the side and say, I don't want any part of this gospel, good news, I don't want anything to do with it, I would just refuse it. You can admire him, you can be intrigued, but never really give him the due that he deserves. You can never really call him the Lord of your life. Or you can be like the mob. The mob, they made a decision, and their decision was, we're going to replace Jesus. Pilate, again, the custom was to release one of these folks. Barabbas was a rascal. Barabbas was a murderer. And yet, the crowd got involved. The mob got involved. I'd like to say we don't see any of that in our culture, in our world today, but we see it all the time. So easy to hide in the mob. It's so easy to get involved, and you think you're anonymous because there's 100 of you, and you can just do anything you want. We see it now all the time. And the mob decided, we don't want this guy to be who he claims to be. And they got the leaders together, and Pilate had this difficult decision, and the choice came down to this. Are we going to set free somebody who's been walking among us, who loves us, who's been teaching us, who's been helping us, who's been trying to pour stuff into our lives, who is really a miracle worker? We've seen it with our own eyes. We're going to have him released, or are we going to release this insurrectionist, this murderer? And the mob decided, let Barabbas go free. We want Jesus to be crucified. And I just think there's a lot of people in our world, most of the people in our world, and we have replaced Jesus with something or someone else. And you say, well, with what? Well, do you really want me to go down the list? We've replaced him with anything and everything. We've replaced him with friendships we call friendships. I love Jesus, but I really like Bob a lot more. Success, jobs, money, fame, popularity, social media, sports. Oh, wish I could be there. We're interested in him. We're intrigued by him. We want to see the show. We don't want to miss anything. But have we made the decision? Jesus, you are number one in my life. I'm telling you, there should be a list of things that are important in your life. And the list should only contain one thing, and that one thing should be Jesus Christ. If Jesus Christ is not number one on your list of one in your heart, you have replaced him. Listen, like everyone else, you have replaced him with someone or something else. Jesus never asked, hey, I'd really like to come in and be, you know, like 1/10 of your life. That'd be so exciting. Like to have, I'd love a little corner over here in your house. That'd be so terrific. I'd like for you to think of me about, you know, once every day or so, maybe 5-10 minutes. That's not what he's asking. That's not what being a Christ follower is. A Christ follower is somebody who surrenders their self to him. And he comes in and he becomes, I mean, for lack of a better word, a boss. He becomes the director of your life. But the mob mentality was, that's not going to happen. That is not going to happen. Number four, the soldiers made a decision, and I'm out of time, but they made a decision to make fun of him. And they put the robe and the crown of thorns and the fake staff, and they mocked him and teased him. And I think, again, that we live in a world that happens all the time. I think we live in the day and age where Christianity and Christ followers, you and me, we're being mocked like we've never been mocked before. Yeah, it's a weird world. We see great things on one hand. There are Christian movies out today. That's good news. That used to never happen. I took my wife, I think back in May, we saw a movie called I Can Only Imagine. Loved it. Fantastic. It's hard to believe that would be at the theater, but it was. And it made a lot of money. Others, Case for Christ, the Samson, Paul the Apostle, War Room. There's others, lots of others. But at the same time, we've never seen our culture more hostile towards Christ believers than we have today. Hostile towards Jesus. Hostile towards the church. You know, we live in a day where you can say anything about Christianity, but you can't say anything about anybody else. It's just amazing to me. If you say something about a group, and they have different terms, protected group, minorities, somebody with a different sexual preference than yours, oh, that's bad. That is so bad. We are going to get a petition. We are all going to sign it. And you are going to be banned. You are going to have to leave the planet. You cannot say that about that, okay? But you can say anything you want about our president, but you can do that too. You can say anything you want about the church and Jesus Christ, and I mean nobody cares. Nobody throws up a red flag. Nobody says, you're crossing a line. You say, oh, these shows, there's all these shows out now. There's a show coming out, God Friended Me. Oh, it's so cute. God Friended Me on Facebook. And, you know, it's going to be awesome. Listen, it's not going to be awesome. It's going to be like the show last year, they had Living Biblically. Oh, here's a guy, he's trapped in this world, and he's trying to live by the principles, but he's also got the pressures of the world. It's going to be a really funny, funny thing, and they canceled that too. All that stuff is meant to demean and diminish the impact of Jesus Christ and the power of the church and the Bible and the gospel in somebody's life. That's all just intended so at the end of the day, you think less of Jesus, not more. That's all just culture shaping. That's all that is. Saturday Night Live is not even meant to be funny. You say, oh, preacher, this stuff just the funny stuff. I mean, come on, lighten up a little bit. It's good to chuckle, you know. I mean, Saturday Night Live's just funny. No, it's not funny. If Saturday Night Live was meant to be funny, first of all, it would be funny. And it's not. It's not funny. It's designed from the beginning to the end, from beginning of the week to the very end of the presentation. The whole thing is designed to fill your head and your heart with political views, to fill your head and your heart with this base belief system that the church and Jesus Christ, they're a joke. That's what they're trying to tell you. If you would make a decision to actually follow Christ, you're the laughingstock of the nation. Just every sketch is designed to make fun of anything that is right and sacred and, according to the Word of God, normal. It doesn't have a comedy point of view. The mockery is in a gear that it's never been before. The epitome of it. We are at the pinnacle of mockery. I call it, I just came up with this term this weekend, Mach 1. That's where we're at. Mach 1. That's how bad it is. It's not funny. TV Land put out a show a couple years ago called Impastor. I don't even need to describe it to you. It was about a fake preacher who stole the identity of a gay preacher in Canada. And the rest of it, every episode, is just a big funny thing about how stupid religious people really are. Can I tell you today, there's no shows making fun of Muslims. Let me know when you find that on ABC. The only people you can make fun of and discard and make light of and call them every name in the book are Jesus followers. And I'm still going to ask you in a moment if you'll make that decision to follow Jesus. Or you can, number five, you can choose to crown him as God did. You can make this choice. You can crown Jesus as Lord of all. You say, well, I don't know if I've got time for that. I don't know if I can do that today. If that's your decision, then you've made a decision. You're going to do something with Jesus today. And they all basically, any decision you come up with is basically two categories. You're either going to refuse him or you're going to receive him. You're either going to crucify him again or you're going to crown him truly as Lord of your life. You're either going to turn your back on him or you're going to trust him as your Lord and as your Savior. Now, I believe with all of my heart that most of you, this is the good news, most of you have already made that wonderful and powerful decision. You want Jesus to be the Lord of your life. So let me ask you, those of you that have made that decision, and again, I think that's a majority in this place this weekend, how many of you, who and when was the last time you shared your faith with somebody, and who was that person? That's what I want you to think about for the next few seconds. That's where this series is going. As we lead up to our anniversary service here in October, we're going to be concentrating on that one person that you need to put yourself in their life in a way that you're going to make a positive difference. Who are you going to pray for? We're going to pray for one person. I'm asking each of us in this place to pray for one person. If you have your bulletin inside, we have a card that looks like this. It's a 1 degree card. The whole series is 1 degree. This card is 1 degree. And I plan on explaining this to you if you'll just grab that out. We believe that 1 degree is a huge, profound thing, that you can make a difference in someone's life. You could be the 1 degree in somebody's life that maybe you haven't really considered as of yet. You can make a profound change just by making the smallest change and letting time and the Lord run its course. For example, if a ship drifts off course by 1 degree, it'll never make it to its desired destination. 1 degree can make a huge impact. What if you were that 1 degree to make a difference in somebody's life? As you can see on this 1 degree card that we have placed in your bulletins, I'm asking everyone here, a member of Cross City, and even if you're not a member, you want to participate, we'd love for you to write down the name of one person who is not yet a Christian, and then we're asking you to pray for that person every single day, and we're asking you to ask God, Lord, what way can I express your love to that person each and every day? And as we lead up to our anniversary service in October, we hope to have these crosses. This is basically from last night's service. These are people who signed the back of this card, the name of the person that you're going to be praying for, sign on both places, and we have a little perforated line in there. You can tear that, you see that? And I want you, when we stand and sing, Trevor and the band's getting ready to come out, and we stand, I'm asking you to bring the name of that one person that God has put in your life. You say, don't overthink it, just somebody down at work, somebody in school, somebody on your team, somebody across the street. You just write the name of one person. Somebody came out today and said, I wrote 7 people's names down. I said, you failed the test. I ask you to stop being an evangelist. We're trying to reach one. So write down the name of one person. Okay? You get another one, write down another name. Don't write 7 on one. I can only pray for one at a time. Anyway, we want you to do that. We're going to stand. I'm going to ask you to come bring these and place these in the basket. If you're in the lobby, we have what's called basket. They're calling it basket stations. I thought you'd be offended by that because some of you, I don't know, basket cases, basket stations, balcony people. So there's baskets up there. Don't be offended. You can put them in there. Or we're going to sing long enough where you can actually come down here. We'll wait for you. I'd love for you to come down here. I love the crowd. I love the mass movement. So if you want to bring that down here, we'll wait on you lovingly and patiently. And you're not a basket case. I'm just messing with you. Most of you are not. But there's something else we want to do today. If you have not yet made Jesus Christ the Lord of your life, maybe you're like Herod, you're intrigued, you don't mind the show, you don't want to miss anything, but you've never really put your name on the dotted line. You've never signed up and said, Jesus is my Lord. I don't care who calls me what. I'm making that decision. Then we want you to step down here also. And all the people are going to be moving, so no one's looking at you. No one's looking at you. We want you to write your name right down here on the stage. I'll be here. I'll shake your hand. I'll put my arm around you. I'll welcome you. And we get your name and information on the back. We're going to put the people who decide to make Jesus the Lord of their life, we're going to put their red cards on that cross. And eventually, by the end of this 6-7 week series, we're praying there's a lot more red cards on those crosses than white cards. The white cards are the people we're going to pray for. You believe in prayer? Is it just me? I believe God wants you to pray for somebody. I believe God wants me to pray. Our staff's going to come in here daily, and we are going to pray for the names on these crosses. We're going to be praying for the person name that you wrote down. We're going to be praying for you. You might have a way. Figure out something. God will inspire you, give you something that during these days and during these weeks, you'll be able to share that love with that person, the love of Jesus Christ. And that God might do something. God might touch their heart. And our prayers, when we get in the middle of October, the end of October, a lot of these people that we're praying for will end up making that decision to give their heart and life to Jesus Christ. So I'm going to say it one more time. If you have one of these in your bulletin, we have others. If you need one, raise your hand. We can pass these things out in a second. Write that name. Write it down twice. So the bottom part goes in here. The top part you get to keep, and you've got their name on there. You put that in your Bible. You just put that in your pocket. You can pray for that person every day. So you're praying for them. Our staff's praying for them. In the course of days and weeks, they might give their heart and life to Jesus Christ. Folks, can you imagine? I mean, I'm so happy to be back. I'm thrilled. I can't even describe. It's been the greatest weekend of my life. Just to be back with you and yelling at you and spitting on you. It's a privilege. But imagine what could happen if each one of us reached one person in the next few months for Jesus Christ. The impact. You think we're making an impact now? We are, but just think. We could double, we could triple, we could go into this city and take it over for Jesus Christ. Oh, that's far bad. Don't make light of it. Make a decision today. Write down the name of somebody you want to share Jesus with, you want Jesus to touch. And if you have not yet made Jesus the Lord of your life, I want you to come right down here. I'll greet you. I'll help you with this. And we're going to, hopefully in the next few weeks, we see more red going up on these crosses than we could ever imagine. It'd have to be a God thing. People have already done it, both services. They've come down and said, you know what? I have not yet made that decision to make Jesus Lord of my life. I want to do it. And sign right here. We'll get in touch with you. We'll help you with the rest of it, the rest of the steps, the process. Just come down and write your name. You can go back to your seat. Again, there'll be people moving all over. Spotlight is not on you. We're encouraging you in any way that we can. So we're going to stand. Trevor's going to lead us and bring those names down and put them in the basket. You too, in the balcony.